The Games and Libraries Podcast, May 2011. On this episode, I talk about National Smash, a new series of events building on the success of National Gaming Day with a set of National Interlibrary Smash Brothers tournaments. I also give another game company profile for Out of the Box Publishing. And Scott interviews Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson. Hello, this is Donald Dennis of the Georgetown County Library System in South Carolina, where I'm the Bytes Project Manager, and welcome back to another Games and Libraries podcast. It's been a while, but we will be issuing them more regularly over the upcoming months, where I'll bring you games and libraries news, and I'll share some of my experiences of the Bytes Games and Technologies program as it comes to a close. And while speaking of the Bytes program, I'd like to mention that I have had an article published in the May 2011 School Library Journal. The article is called Stop Disasters, and it's about how gaming programs can help disseminate vital information to the community. Let me know what other ideas you'd have for integrating games into your programs, and I'd love to hear any opinions on the programs that I've described in that article. Before I get into our scheduled content, I'd like to let you know that North Star Games has just released the Wits and Wagers Family Edition, which is a slightly more child-friendly version of Wits and Wagers. You may remember North Star Games because in the past they have provided free games to library participants of the National Games Day. And at the Gaming Learning Library Symposium 2008, they provided copies of Wits and Wagers to all the participants at that event.
Hi there, everyone. This is Scott Nicholson with a late-breaking addition to the Games and Libraries podcast. Yesterday, I got back from New York City, where I traveled to the New York Public Library to spend all night playing in the Find the Future library game. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened from my view as a participant. In future episodes, I'll be reflecting more upon running these sorts of things, but I wanted to give you some initial reactions of what it was like to be a player in this game. Jane McGonigal is a person that does very large-scale games for change. That's what she does. And so she was hired by the New York Public Library to put this together that goes along with their 100th anniversary. And so what they're actually doing is they put together 100 items from their library that had meaning and worked with Jane to create this large game. Now, what they did is they actually put out a call for people to apply, and they selected 500 people from those that applied. And the idea was that you had to come to New York City, you check-in began at 7 p.m., you had to be in the library by 7:45, the doors were going to close, and by 8 o'clock the game was going to begin. The game would run from 8 p.m. until 6 a.m. the next morning. So you knew all this ahead of time, that you were going to be up all night, so you should be prepared for it. Other things that they told us is that it would be beneficial to have a smartphone, but you didn't need to have one. That it would be helpful to have a laptop, but again, you didn't need to have one. That you did need to have comfortable shoes, that you needed to eat a full meal before the event. And that you knew that once it started, you were not going to be able to leave and come back in. That you were there for the night, and if you left, then you would not be able to rejoin the activity. And so I showed up with 499 other very nervous people. They had set up a Facebook group ahead of time and some Twitter lists ahead of time. A lot of the things that were being set up by individuals as compared to being organized by the group. I actually got in through a back door. Originally, I had not applied because I was going to be involved with teaching a class. It didn't happen. And so a few days before the event, Jane McGonigal tweeted that she had 5 slots remaining, and you could send a tweet in order to compete to get in one of these last 5 slots. And I managed to get one of those slots that way. So that's how I got in. So I showed up to the library about 7:15 and was directed into a line for check-in. And then when I checked in, they took my information and checked my ID. They checked my bag as I was going in. You're not allowed to take alcohol, weapons, things like that. You were allowed to bring food and drink, though, in sealed containers and encouraged to do so. I got checked in, and then the next step was to download a smartphone application, if you had a smartphone, that was going to be used to run the game. The game was then introduced, and we had to make a decision. There was an initial play about the one person was taking on the role of patience, another person was taking on the role of fortitude, which are also the names of the lions out front in the library. And you had to choose if you were going to join Team Patience or Team Fortitude. And each team went up a different set of stairs into the library, and then you were given a ticket for your team, but then all ushered into one reading room. And then the initial announcements began. And so during the initial announcements, they explained what was going to be going on, explained the basic rules of the game. And after they explained the rules, we were then one team went into one reading room, another team was in another reading room for the rest of the evening. So the basic structure of the game, what was going on, is ahead of time they had identified 100 items. And on your smartphone, you had the app where you could see a small group of them. It began with 20 items that were available to you. And on the app, it told you in what room in the library you would find the item. Now, this was not really a scavenger hunt. It would say things like, it's in the atrium, it's in the Bill Blass room, it's in this room. So you knew which room to go to. And all the items were part of library collections, so you weren't actually searching the shelves for anything. They did have some books as items, but to get those, you actually just put in a slip and requested that book from someone. So the scavenger hunt portion of the game was actually pretty minor. You just had to go to a room and look around. Probably the biggest room was the main exhibit for a lot of these important items, and you just spent time looking around and finding the items. Now, each of the items had a QR code, which is kind of like a barcode attached to them. So you would then use your phone to scan in the QR code. After you scan in the QR code, the phone would do an animation that took about a minute or so. And the idea was that while the animation was going on, you were to take in the exhibit. The idea was that you were absorbing the power of the item. And that was actually a clever thing to do, because what it forced you to do is it forced you to slow down, and it forced you to actually look at the thing that you came there, not just running from scanning barcode to barcode, but actually stand there in front of the item and look at it and absorb it. That was the idea. You were absorbing the power. And then once you absorbed the power, you activated the item, and then it was unlocked in your account. And then what you would do is go back to the main reading room and go to one of the computers or your laptop and log into the website. And as you activated things on your smartphone, they then became unlocked for you on the website. And you could go in there, and then for each item you were given a quest. And the quest was some sort of a writing activity or something like that. For example, one of the quests was for Winnie the Pooh. So they had the stuffed animals that were the inspiration for Winnie the Pooh. And so your challenge here, I'll read it to you, was to create a mascot that Milne brought a stuffed bear to life, writing stories about Pooh and his adventures in the 100-acre wood. In these stories, Pooh and his friends became the embodiment of kindness, friendship, loyalty, and courage. What values do you think will be most important in the future? Create a new mascot and friends who could embody these values. Write the first story together or draw your first illustration of them. So those are the challenges. For each of these items, there was an affiliated quest. So what you'd find the item, you'd scan in the item, you'd come back to your computer, you'd load up the quest, and then you'd write a response. And then you'd send that response off to be published. What was going on then is in another room, they were collecting these responses, printing them out on the paper, and they actually had brought in a bookbinder. And the goal was to actually bind a book that evening that would then become part of the New York Public Library's permanent collection. Now, what actually happened is they ran out of time with the bookbinder because we were delayed in getting our stories in because of various logistical problems. So the book was not completed. We did all sign the book, and the pages were all the content was there. They were finishing out putting it together. So very soon that book will be there for anyone to go and look at there at the New York Public Library. So as a player, you also had a small squad, which are people that you could work with. And so if anyone in your squad would go and scan something in, you would be able to write on it. So if everyone didn't have a cell phone, you just had to be in a squad with someone who did, and they would link all of your usernames together. So the evening was spent running around the library and then coming back and sitting and writing and then running around and coming back and sitting and writing. As the evening went on, people got more and more tired. Deadlines came and went throughout the evening. There were tours of the stacks available where you would actually go down into the stacks under New York Public Library, which, to be honest, looked kind of like any other library stacks. but during that tour, there were actually postcards that you could pick up one of. And the postcard was from the future to someone else at the event. And one of your goals, once you got a postcard, was to find that other person and deliver it to them. So imagine 500 people, each with one other person's name. So there was a lot of craziness. Someone did find me. I never found my person. But near the end, they collected the postcards of people who hadn't been found, and they used that to facilitate getting them to the right folks. So it was exhausting, as you can imagine. We stayed up all night. They did provide some food and drink throughout the night, little sandwiches and things like that that would be available, so you could go and take a break and get a little something to eat. I really got tired about 3 or so in the morning, and they had a quiet room set aside where you can go and put your head down and have a brief nap, which I took advantage of as well. So at the end of the night, they brought everyone back together and explained that we'd gotten the book written and that they were now going to be putting that together. That'll be part of the collection. And we all signed the book and went on into the night. So, now what? Well, that I'm not sure. And that's why I can't give you any more of the story at the moment. I'm watching to see what will happen, if they're going to give us some sort of stories about the book or let us see what went on. I'm not sure what the next steps are. As a player, I got to explore some of these exhibits at the New York Public Library. I'd spend some time looking at things that I would not have looked at, some time looking at objects, because the game forced you to slow down and look at objects, and to spend time thinking about some of these objects in different ways that I normally wouldn't have done. I was disappointed in that it wasn't really a scavenger hunt. I was hoping we'd be exploring the library, hunting for things, but it was really go to this place, find this one item that's in the exhibit, scan it in, then come back. So most of the time was really spent in the creative process and the writing process. So the idea was, could you bring together 500 people and all write a book together? And yes, you can. You can do it, and it's possible to do. I know Jane McGonigal is going to be doing some writings for libraries as guides who want to do this kind of event. I'm going to be thinking about it a bit more, and we'll talk about it more on future podcasts. But I wanted to just give you the brief view from a participant of what this game was all about. If you want to see more about it, you can actually go to game.nypl.org, and there you can actually set up an account. You can see what's going on, and you can actually enter your own story. So you can still get the smartphone app. It's called Find the Future. You can get it on an iPhone or on an Android. And you can see what the app is all about. You can explore the quests. So you can actually add your own stories at this point. So this activity is still going to go on, and anyone can engage with it.
Eli Nyberger sends in, "Greetings, people of Smash. I come to you today with news of Interlibrary Smash Bros. Opportunities that are not National Gaming Day 2011, which happens to be coming up on 11/14/2011. But that's a long time away, months even, as Stimson J. Cat repeatedly said, what'll we do till then? Well, how about National Smash, a new series of events building on the success of National Gaming Day, with a set of National Interlibrary Smash Bros. Tournaments that come more than once a year. National Smash 1 is coming up on Saturday, June 25th, 2011, and National Smash 2 will follow just a month later on Saturday, July 23rd, 2011. Other dates will be announced soon, but also be sure to pencil in a National Smash on Gaming Day if you haven't already. Once again, National Gaming Day is 11/14/2011. So, if you're interested in joining a roster of fine libraries across the country that will be joining in on National Smash 1 or 2, just visit us at GT System Wiki at wiki.gtsystem.org and add your friend code to one or both of these rosters. See the show notes for details. If you have any questions, just let Eli know, and they hope to see you online this summer. Thanks for your interest, and keep on smashing. Eli's email is Nyberger, N-E-I-B-U-R-G-E-R-E, at aadl.org. For the game company profile, this kind of follows up on the Fantasy Flight profile I gave in the previous episode. Since then, I've talked with Leigh Osterhaus of Out of the Box Publishing. Out of the Box publishes the 10 Days series, which is great for teaching geography. It also has a variety of word games like Letter Roll, Word on the Street, and My Word, and Out of the Box was the original publisher of Apples to Apples. They also make Backseat Drawing, which everyone who attended the 2008 Gaming's Learning and Library Symposium received for free. Leigh wanted me to let you know Out of the Box games are available through Demco, and for convenience's sake, they recommend libraries purchase the games through them. However, Out of the Box does offer 25% discounts to educators and libraries who order directly through Out of the Box for any reason. Some of the good things you need to know about Out of the Box is that they offer video demos, and they have how to demonstrate flyers. So if you want to learn how to show off their games, or you need to learn how to play them, they've got all of that online to help you out. They also have national school standards matching, and they offer other support. So Out of the Box is very serious about getting their games out to libraries and teachers because they find that board games are such great teaching tools. Now, she sent me some samples of some of their games, all of which we've managed to get to the table, and I'm going to give a very brief review for some of those right now, though you will hear more about other Out of the Box games in future episodes. One of Out of the Box's most impressive sets of games is their 10 Days series, five games that span the globe from 10 days in the Americas, 10 days in Europe, 10 days in Africa, and 10 in Asia. They also have one that focuses just on USA called, well, you guessed it, 10 Days in the USA. If you need games that reinforce or teach geography, this title organization game exposes players to a great deal of geography in a very short period, but it does so in a way that engages the participants. In the 10-day series, players are trying to organize 10 tiles in sequence that they could travel. So the tiles are either locations or travel tiles, and on their turn, players will draw and replace one of the tiles in their tray. The first player to create a sequence of 10 tiles wins the game. Knowledge of geography or ability to read the maps help players to achieve victory. Check out the Out of the Box site for a video tutorial. Oh, of particular interest to libraries would be the out-of-the-box word games. Let a Roll is a big winner in our library, drawing interest from patrons at our game days and librarians alike. The players roll these large dice with 20 sides on them, but on each side, instead of a number, they have letters. And then they have to come up with a list of words using those letters. So while everybody's writing those letters, of course, time is ticking down. When time is up, the players eliminate the duplicates and get points for their own unique words. This is a great game for generating discussion about vocabulary, as well as exposing younger players to words that they might not otherwise have known. Out of the Box also has Letter Flip, which is basically Hangman with fancy trays and letter tiles. Players take turns guessing letters and trying to guess the four words listed on their opponent's card. This is a great game for kids trying to expand their vocabulary, but not at all engaging for older players. The limit of two players also makes Letter Flip much less appealing than the more versatile Letter Roll, but on the other hand, there are no dice, so it's much quieter for library settings. Once again, you can get their products through Demco, or you can order it directly through Out of the Box for a 25% discount. Check the show notes for contact information for Out of the Box. And that wraps up this introduction to Out of the Box games.
So hi there, everyone. This is Scott Nicholson for the Gaming Libraries Podcast, and I'm here with a special guest.
My name's Larry here of Xbox Live's Major Nelson.
Hi there, and I'm over here actually in Seattle at Microsoft.
You're literally on campus about a mile away from my office.
That's right. This is where all the magic happens.
Well, some of it, yeah.
I happened to be here for an academic conference. While I was here, I said, hey, why don't we hook up and chat a little bit about this Kinect thing?
And here we are.
Well,
I was up in your neck of the woods, what was it, October, November?
A tech demo for what was coming up with Kinect.
Right. This is before Kinect launched, You and I connected then, and now we're here, and let's make it happen.
All right. So what we want to do today is chat a little bit about Kinect, talk about what's going on with Kinect and how libraries might be interested in it. So for those libraries out there that haven't yet, the folks that haven't yet heard of Kinect, they probably all heard of Kinect, but they might not have an idea what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the simplest way to describe it is controller-free gaming. Up until this point, a lot of, you need to have something in your hands or you need to have a keyboard to interact with the game. What we've done here at Microsoft, specifically with Xbox, is we turn your body into the controller. So now you stand in front of your TV. There's a sensor, a Kinect sensor, that you mount above or below the TV, and it senses your body, and it can have full 3D depth mapping. So it knows exactly where you are and what you're doing. It can sense your limbs and what you're doing with your various limbs, and we bring that into the game.
Now, one of the neat things about that is I know a lot of libraries out there have played with the Wii and worked with that, and that has similar sensor, but what the Wii requires you to have this wireless remote.
Right.
And one of the challenges with that for any library that's tried to use it is a security issue.
Sure, it could walk away.
Right.
And those things are not cheap.
Right. And they work with all Wiis.
Yeah.
So that's actually been a real concern about libraries trying to figure out a lanyard solution or a security solution. And so one thing I was excited about when I first learned about the Kinect is it seems a really cool solution to the security problem for libraries trying to run a public gaming event.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, we've seen that problem before, and with any handheld controller situation. With Kinect, you can actually set it up in such a way, and you can even put it behind glass if you wanted to shoot through, to protect it even further. But you're right. To your point, there's no need to even have any controllers. It removes that both from a security, a safety, and a health standpoint either, because you don't have to clean anything up.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about how a library could use Kinect. Now, I see here in the Microsoft this cafeteria, you've actually got a Kinect set up with a TV and a Kinect playing. I saw some people playing with it.
Yep.
What are the things that have to go into place in order to create sort of a public Kinect station like that?
Well, the first thing you'll need, of course, is the system. And so you need to have a television. We recommend a high-def TV. which unfortunately they're a little bit more expensive than the standard. Can you even buy standard def anymore? I don't know.
I don't know. But.
So anyway, you're going to need a TV. You're going to need some type of display mechanism. Of course, it will also work with a computer monitor.
Would it work with a projector?
It will work with a projector.
Okay.
It will work with a projector. The problem you run into is that the Kinect sensor has to be a specific length away because of the cord to the Xbox 360. So you just need to make sure that the room is kind of configured appropriately.
Okay, so the Kinect itself has to be hooked up to the Xbox.
Correct.
And pointing towards the players.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So anyway, you need a display, whether it's a LCD, a projector, or some type of television display. You need to have that. Obviously, the bigger, the better. And then you just need an Xbox 360. Now, we do sell two different versions. We sell what we call the arcade SKU, or basically it's one without a hard drive, and then we sell one with a hard drive. If libraries are looking to do this on a budget, I would say they don't need the hard drive. Now, I will say this, is you can always upgrade it later on.
Now, what's that one called, the one without a hard drive?
So that is so there's the arcade, and there's really what's called the Pro. So it's Xbox 360 or the Xbox 360 Arcade. Easy way to tell it is the one without the hard drive has a matte finish.
Okay.
And the glossy one is the one with the hard drive. But again, the hard drive can be snapped in later on.
Okay.
What you will not be missing any experiences relative to Kinect with the hard drive. Generally, you'll be fine.
Okay.
So I want to point that out, and that can save you probably about $100.
Yeah, and that's good for libraries to know, because when you start looking at all the choices,
it can get confusing quickly.
Right. So the Xbox Arcade
it
doesn't have a hard drive, but for use with a Kinect, it's not going to make a difference.
Absolutely not. It'll work just fine. So, of course, we sell a bundle that has that particular console and the Kinect together. You can get one of those, and that'll be just fine. And then we have all the cables inside that'll work for you. Obviously, the power supply, and then you're good to go. Now, once you get that, then, of course, as folks know, you need the games.
Okay.
You need the titles.
What would be some of the titles you would suggest for this kind of public game space?
Well, Scott, I don't know if you've talked about this on your show, because I haven't caught up recently, but my sister's a librarian.
Okay.
And I've been advising her. She's a librarian on the East Coast. I've been advising her, so she has a Kinect. I sent her a Kinect, and she's been working on it. And she found out that, so we were talking about space, right? So she found out basically what pretty much everyone finds out. You need about 8 or 10 feet away. And you want to have...
So that's from the screen to
That's from the screen to
back.
Kind of where the person should be standing. Now you're going to want to have another foot or two behind them so they don't bump into anything.
Okay.
What we found with Kinect is that as people are playing, they get so into the game they kind of forget that there's a lamp. And there's one hitting the lamp above us.
Right.
You know, so you got to make sure you kind of clear off some of those things. So you just need a space that you can... That you can basically use Kinect in. And basically, it doesn't have to be a dedicated space. When you're not using Kinect, you can do reading in there.
Okay.
So really, you can if you had just a bunch of beanbag chairs in an area where people are reading, you can push those beanbags aside, and all of a sudden, you have a Kinect space.
So you need about a 6 by 12 foot space,
you'd
say?
Now, I will say this. If that's for a single person, if you're going to go more, you're going to want a little bit more. You don't need double. It doesn't scale up like that. But you are going to need a little bit more space, and a lot of the games do support two-player.
Yeah, and I can agree with I've got a Kinect myself in my basement,
right.
And it's set up, and I use it with myself. I finally played with someone else, and we were busy colliding into each other because I didn't quite have
enough space
for two people. So that's if you want to have a game that can support two people, then you're going to need a little bit more width. That's what I found out, is we were flailing into each other. So maybe more like an 8 by 12 foot space.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, you're talking about the titles. Some of the titles that I recommend are, one of the greatest ones is Kinect Sports.
Okay.
This is one with a series of sports mini games. That you can kind of get right in, and there's there's paddle tennis, ping pong, there's some running games and things like that. They're really interesting. Now, I will say this, every Kinect that we sell comes with a game. So
Kinect Adventures,
right.
which is a great little game. That's the one I've used to introduce people to Kinect.
Yeah, so that's exactly.
There's a lot of fun mini games in that too.
So even if libraries just want to go out and purchase the bundle, they're going to be fine right from the start. They'll have a game to do right at the very beginning, and then kind of step back and realize what other kind of games we've got. As I said, Kinect Sports. We've got Dance Central, which is a rhythm-based game where it can see you moving and you learn the dance moves. So there's things along those lines. I just finished just before we got here. I was playing around with a new one. About Body and Brain. It was done by the same folks who did the Nintendo DS Brain Age.
Okay.
So this one is now using your body and your brain.
Okay.
So that one also may work well. So I've just started playing with that one.
All right.
One just came out this week.
Now, with that one, is there a mode with a series of mini games, or is it more designed for help one player explore.
There's a series of mini games. You can walk up and you can say, test my brain age, and they'll do three random mini games and do that. So it was a lot of fun.
So I know that's been one of the frustrations with libraries trying to use some of those brain type games that are keyed to an individual.
Right.
In that that's not really the setting. You have someone walking up, they want to have a 3 to 5 minute game experience and they want to walk away. Right. So the mini game structure works really well. And I cannot, the Kinect Sports is a lot of fun. Actually, I was surprised how much fun ping pong was.
Yeah.
And once you realize you can move your feet, it becomes such a different game than like the Wii Tennis. If you want to play Wii Tennis, the ping pong is actually this whole new dimension because you're using your hand, and as you change the angle of your hand, it's hitting the ball in different ways. And I've watched people sort of just unlock and get really involved. And you make a good point. Once you start playing with Kinect and you realize that the physical point of your body matters so much more than with the Wii games, you begin moving around your space and flailing much more, which is why this clearing out an empty space
is pretty important.
And ensuring that people aren't wandering by.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I think about in a library setting, where you may, if you don't have a clearly delineated space where people are playing, someone might wander by not being aware of what's going on and take a hand upside the head.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You don't want somebody who's browsing for a piece of nonfiction all of a sudden be blacked out on the floor prone.
That tends to be a bad thing.
But yeah, it's you do, you know, that is something that's really important. And it's again, it's not a lot of space, and this is space that doesn't have to be dedicated to gaming. Once, obviously, when you're gaming, you want it, but when you're not using it, you can certainly use that space for something else.
Now, let's talk about the future with Kinect. So libraries, if they're going to invest in this, they want to feel comfortable that there's going to be more stuff for it. So what's going to be coming down the pipe?
Well, I can tell you this, is that, you know, Microsoft is a company, and Xbox, if you've seen, we're committed. We sold over, I don't want to get too salesy, but we sold over 8 million over the holiday.
I think it was a shock to probably you guys as well.
If we could have made more, we could have sold more.
Right. It was really that point. It was one of those products that I don't think anyone would have predicted.
Yeah, so
they'd go gangbusters.
Yeah, we were real happy with that. But you know, we're committed to this product in long form. We're going to continue to invest in the technology. And you know, one thing we haven't talked about, Scott, up until this point, is that you can take the console and you connect it online.
Mm-hmm.
We have a free subscription. You can go Xbox Live. There's a free version and a paid version. I would suggest libraries sign up and get the free version, which is a simple gamer tag.
Okay.
They can get updates. They can download free game demos, which is fantastic. It's a great opportunity for them to try out new games. There's about 3 or 4 game demos up there for Kinect right now.
Okay.
So that's something that they can do. Again, they just would need to hook the console into their existing wireless or wired connection, and boom, they're done.
And that's the Xbox Live Silver?
That is Xbox Live Silver.
Right. And I've been really impressed with how much free stuff you can get once you've set up that account. And that's a nice thing for libraries to explore.
Yeah.
Is it's a way of trying things out to see if your patrons enjoy that sort of game before you invest the money in it.
Precisely. That's exactly why we do it for consumers. I mean, certainly there's a lot of people that have Kinects and Xboxes at home, but this is a great point, is that you don't need zero investment. I mean, they sign up for a free account, and they put it on assuming they have an existing internet connection, and they're good to go.
Okay. So again, if you're looking at, once you get the Xbox, this is another choice you're going to have to look at. They'll talk about Xbox Gold and Xbox Silver.
Xbox Silver's fine. They can always be upgraded, but really, at this point, my understanding of what libraries need, gold would be perfect. Or excuse me, silver would be perfect. Gold, you know, libraries aren't going to be doing multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these, there's Netflix and things like that. They don't need that. Xbox Live Silver will be just fine.
Okay, and again, that's free.
Free.
So the Xbox Arcade is the one without the hard drive to save some money. The Xbox Silver is a free way to get online to get your patches and updates and demos as well.
As you can tell, with my sister as a librarian, I'm well aware of fiscal issues, so I'm trying to be sensitive to that.
Now, how about, I've heard some discussion about using the Kinect for other sorts of applications other than games. Any idea what's going to be happening with that?
So we've seen a lot of activity in the community, and we're looking at how we can maximize that. We don't really have anything that, we're just kind of letting people have fun with it right now. We want to enable that fun. We don't want to say no, you don't want to do that, or we don't want you to do that. We want people to have fun. We realize we're at a pivot point in this technology with this, what we call NUI, natural user interface.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to just have fun with it. So we're going to kind of take a step back and watch people. We're going to continue to do great stuff in the games, but you're talking specifically outside of the Xbox ecosystem.
Right.
Yeah, people are doing crazy things on the PCs and whatnot.
Yeah, that's actually, that is a potential exciting thing for a library, to create a version of their catalog that people could navigate by waving around in space.
Yeah,
sort of,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, exploring what's going on with that.
And we're
going
to be doing a lot of things. Right now, we have the ESPN app, is which is part of the service, is Xbox Live Services. You can use your hands with that. So you can kind of see there's a lot of beginnings of what you can do and see where the natural user interface will evolve.
One more question on Kinect. So one of the challenges in a library game space is that there's a lot of people will be milling around.
Sure.
So you'll have one person that's playing the game, and then in the background there might be 10 or 12 others watching.
Yeah.
What effect does that have on the Kinect experience?
I gotta tell you, so let me illustrate it this way. When I was up at Syracuse last fall, which that's my alma mater, I had Kinect set up in the Carrier Dome, and I was doing a demo. And I had someone step up and was playing Kinect. And we had about 30 to 40 people behind them in the middle of the Carrier Dome. And Kinect doesn't really care about anybody else except the person playing.
Okay.
So it sees them. It can be aware that things are there. But it's like, you're not what I'm interested in. This person is the player.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a whole system where you can step up and identify and sign in and so forth. So it doesn't really care how many people watch.
Okay.
In fact, I encourage it.
Well, that's neat. And actually, one thing that I found it was surprising, a little creepy, when I was playing Kinect with someone else, because it knew who I was, because I'd been playing Kinect, so it identified me as a person.
Right.
And the two of us were playing two-player games, and at one point we switched position, and it picked up on it.
It knew who you were.
And it said, oh, wait, now you're over here. You need to tell me what to do. And because it was kind of creepy to say, oh, really, you're watching me, aren't you?
Well, that's the power of software, you know, being able to figure out and look at you and say, okay, we know who you are. And you're moving around. So to your point, you know, it follows the players around in the play space really well, and just throws it sees everything else. We call that data, and it throws all that data away because it's not interested in it.
So that's good to hear. So a library that's in a crowded game space, as long as you have a large enough space for the player to be, you can have other people watching what's going on. They won't interrupt the game.
Yeah, not at all. And as you've probably seen, you know, Kinect, if you leave the play space, the game pauses.
Right.
You know, little things like that that kind of make sense. You walk back in, you can pick right up, and we have, you can hot swap people in and out, so it's not like this person has to, they could leave, and you can bring somebody else in, and it'll just kind of identify them and say, okay, you're now quote-unquote player one.
Right, right. Any other words of wisdom for libraries interested in bringing Xbox in as one of their services?
I would recommend, if they can, go to one of their local stores, like the Best Buys or the GameStops, and just kind of watch it and see it. If they're having trouble visualizing what we're talking about, of course, they can check out Xbox.com. We have all the marketing materials up there. But kind of go down and experience it and see what's going on and kind of understand what it is. And then talk to your patrons and see what they're playing and see what they like, because this may really, really excite a lot of them. When I sent my sister a Kinect system for the holidays, she's like, I don't need that. She plays it every day now. So my suggestion is really just to go down and check it out at your local retailers. A lot of them, especially the Best Buys and larger retailers and Targets, have it already set up, and they can kind of see, like, oh, this is the way it works. And that's a similar situation, because we had to work with our retail partners to make sure that it worked in their space, which is a lot of the same challenges that libraries
have. Public space,
security,
around,
health, all the rest of these things were something we've already kind of refined on that side.
Okay.
So they can see kind of how it's already set up.
Okay. Now, talking outside of Kinect, then, what are some of the things regarding the Xbox that libraries might want to consider adding in if they're purchasing an Xbox for the first time? What would be some titles, for example, that might work well in a sort of public gaming short-time space where people can come up and play a short
game? Before I get to that, I want to bring up a good point is that the Xbox 360 also has a very robust set of controls.
Okay.
So if libraries are worried about showing M-rated content, they may or may not be familiar with the ratings board that we have that oversees video games, but there's certain content, obviously M-rated is some of the more violent. You can actually go into the Xbox and create an account and say, you know what, I only want to I only want the Xbox to be able to play specific types of content.
Okay.
So maybe something that's a little bit more appropriate for public areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I urge them to go look, and we've got a whole documentation on Xbox.com that shows exactly how to set it up, so that if somebody brings in that Gears of War disc and slip it in, you know, that may not be appropriate for some areas.
Right.
So we're very sensitive to that. As far as other games are concerned, you know, we talked a little bit about all the demos that are available. First of all, there's a wealth of demos on Xbox Live. I think there's something on the order of 300 demos that we have up there. And that's just, those are what we call retail game demos. And then we have all these Xbox Live Arcade demos.
Okay.
So every single game, there's a bunch of wonderful puzzle games. There's one called Braid. Have you played Braid?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Braid is wonderful. Limbo is wonderful. These are games that really don't require any more anything to do than push the joystick around and press A, yet they're really engaging and really fascinating. And then some of them are really interesting situations and teach people how to solve puzzles.
Okay.
And it's really exciting when I see people using those games and then having the discussion together, how to try to decipher the puzzle and talk it through.
Well, what's fun to watch when those sort of games, so Braid is an interesting puzzle game, to have a group of people playing it where one person's controlling, but everyone else is helping them. It's sort of a group puzzle solving situation. Yeah. And that actually works well in this kind of situation where you have a group of library patrons that all of a sudden are coming together around a shared challenge where they're trying to help someone work through this gauntlet of puzzles and traps.
Yeah, and again, cool some of these puzzles, you know, both of the games we mentioned have no blood or guns.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think that the Xbox is a bloody shooter box, and certainly we have our share of first-person shooters that require that. We have a vast library. The overwhelming majority of it are just wonderfully simple, interesting games.
Yeah. Now, with the Xbox Silver account, can they purchase Xbox Live Arcade titles?
Absolutely.
And that's good to hear. That's actually, the majority of my personal collection is actually the shorter, casual games out of Xbox Live Arcade.
And each, you know, every single one has a free trial.
Right. You can try it out. I've really enjoyed things like Geometry Wars.
Oh, boy.
That works really well in that kind of very light game setting. Yeah. You know, Castle Crashers is a fun, kind of crazy...
With four people.
Yeah. And so, again,
now, let's be clear. I also want to be clear is that all the games you and I are talking about right now are controller-based.
Right.
So that's something to point out, even though we started under Kinect. These are controller-based, and I could see a time in the future where a lot of these games will have Kinect options. Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to a question about sort of serious gaming with the Kinect. Mm-hmm. So I've heard some discussions about, yes, the Kinect's used for these sports games and party games and things like that. But what about folks that are wanting to do more serious games? Mm-hmm. How is the Kinect going to be used for those, or what's going to be going on?
Well, I can tell you this is that, you know, when we launched it, we wanted to make sure that we had the right type of experiences for Kinect folks. You could easily take any game and Kinectify it, as you will. We don't want to do that. We want to make sure that the experience is really pure. So I can tell you, we announced at Tokyo Game Show when I was over in Tokyo in September, there's a lot of our Japanese developers that are working on what one would consider hardcore games. So they're working on some things like that right now. We're just not ready to announce them.
Okay. Well, I can personally say I was really surprised at how much fun playing with the Kinect was.
Yeah.
You know, I've played with the Wii, I've used all this stuff, but I set up the Kinect, I actually had it running during my Christmas party, and I was really surprised how fun it was to engage with the space, and I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting kind of like a little bit more of what you get with the Wii, but it's very different when you're able to physically move in the space.
And then it tracks you and you interact with the game.
And that excited me. That me saying, this is different, isn't it? This is pretty cool. So for libraries, if you're thinking about it, head to a local retailer or see if one of your patrons or one of their kids has it, to give it a shot and see if it's something that might be interesting. It's something you can set up and have running even when you're not doing a gaming program. You can have a Kinect space where people can go and engage with each other.
And I will say this, is that if this, it's also a, you know, the Xbox 360 is also a DVD player. It can also play, can also show photographs and play music. So if you, you know, if libraries are looking for something to do in terms of work and play DVDs, it also does that. So it does quite a few other things as well.
Now, you have a podcast.
I do.
Do you want to tell people how they can listen to
that? Sure. If you go to my gamer tag is Major Nelson, and you can go to majornelson.com, and I certainly have a podcast up there that I've been doing about 5 or 6 or 7 years now. I can't even remember. Mm-hmm. Love to have people stop by. It's a little bit hardcore, but it's all about Xbox 360. I have members of my operations team and some developers joining me, and we just talk about what we're playing, and kind of it's kind of an insight of what it's like to work on products like Xbox and Kinect.
Okay, so I encourage people, if they want to learn more about what's up with Xbox, head over to your podcast and check you out. Thank you very much, Major Nelson, for spending some time
with me. Scott, thank you for having me.
And we'll look forward to what's going to come next with Kinect.
Absolutely.
I'm Donald Dennis, and I'm here with
Courtney Miller,
who's the Byte Site Supervisor for the Andrews Library. And we're here for Game Time, which is an after-school program once a week where we get together and we play board games. And I'm also here with Danny and Gabriel.
Hi.
Who played Shake and Take with us by Out of the Box. Shake and Take is a game where it's my turn. I'm going to pick up the die that has different shapes on it. I'm going to roll that die. And then I'm going to be searching on my little mat that I have for aliens that are that shape.
And they're just little strange little doodles. And so I'm going to grab the magic marker, the dry erase marker that has the alien head, and I'm going to quickly start scrambling to find all of those that I quickly can.
And while Donald is searching, I'm going to shake this little egg with the green dye in it until the alien face appears. And then I'm going to grab the pin from him.
Right. So when the alien face appears, she grabs the pin from my hand, and I can no longer start doing it. She's going to grab the dye and roll it, and then she's going to start searching for aliens as well. And the person next to her, who is Gabriel, he's going to start rolling the die with the alien. And this is going to go around the table until one of us has filled up our playmat. And so, guys, Gabriel, what did you think about it? Did you enjoy the game?
Yes.
What'd you like about it?
It is quickly.
Oh, it moves quickly, so you like the pacing? All right. And Danny, did you like it?
I kind of sort of liked it.
Okay. Why did you like it?
I liked it because, like, you had to go really fast. You had to have fast reflexes.
Right. It's very frantic kind of gameplay, wouldn't you say, Courtney?
Obviously.
But the part I didn't like about it was, like, someone could, like, roll it and then get the alien in one roll.
And get the one go. Yeah, so it's a perception game where you're trying to find the things as quickly as possible, but there's also that random luck element to say when is the alien face going to turn up so that it ends somebody's turn. Now, if there were six or more of us playing, there would be two of the alien eggs dice that are going around and two of the people who are searching, and that gets kind of frantic. Now, when those two collide, where if one group is going faster and all of a sudden the alien egg gets to the guy who's also supposed to be searching, that person has to decide, are they going to try and find aliens or are they going to roll the egg to prevent the other person from finding more aliens? So that doesn't work so well. I think it works really well with four players. Did you guys say it works well with four?
Yes.
Yeah.
For our library listeners, since this is the Games and Libraries podcast, would you say this is a good game for the library?
No, I wouldn't, because it's kind of, like, loud.
Okay.
And libraries are supposed to be quiet.
Same thing.
How about you, Courtney?
And I am different. This game is positive for younger kids. It makes it easy on the backside of the mat.
Right, there are two difficulty levels. On one side, you have really highly characterized symbols, and on the other side, it's more obvious which one would be. So if you're playing with different levels of age group, you can have the younger kids play with the easy setting.
Right, and also, today, libraries are getting louder and louder and louder, so I'm all for it.
Right, and if you've got a meeting room or a conference room or something where people can play and close the door, it's not too bad, but yes, you wouldn't want to play it out on the tables next to the reference desk.
Right.
Another thing about Shake and Take is that all the components have their own special place in the box. So if you've let it out to some kids and they bring it back to you, so you can tell that all the pieces are there, you know, all the dice, the markers and everything. So it's a good kit game box. So you, just so that you can tell that everything is there, it makes it easy to put away at the end of the day. Well, this is our review of Shake and Take. And I think if you've got a program with kids and you're trying to get them to burn off a little bit of extra energy or something, that this will help them focus as well as keep them exciting and moving quickly in their chairs.
Yep.
All right, and so this is Donald Dennis.
Courtney Miller.
Yeah.
And Danny.
And that's our review of Out of the Box's Shake and Take.
I'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of the Games and Libraries podcast. If you have any ideas for incorporating games into your library experience, or if you had any experiences, be they good or bad, that we might all learn from, please record that and share it with us. Send any ideas for segments, or any segments that you record, or any questions to donaldgdennis@gmail.com.